Begin the current daf Masech Sukkah daf Lamed Zayin. We begin 9 lines down from the top of the Yamed. The Gemara continues the discussion of the previous daf. That is, on the previous daf, we introduced in the Mishnah a machlekes regarding what type of min has to be used to make the aguda, the binding of the lulav with the adasim na'arabas. And it was Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that one has to use minoy. You have to bind it together with the same species as the lulav itself. You have to use the leaves of the lulav. Now, Rava explained that you don't have to use just the leaves of the lulav. It could even be from the ivy that grows around the palm tree, or even the actual trunk of the tree. You slice it up and you make it into like a type of a string, and you could wrap it together with that. That was proven from a brisa where it came out that Rabbi Yehuda said that the halachas of schach have to have the same halachas as the dal minim, meaning you could only make the sukkah out of the dal minim. And yet still a Mishnah Daf Yudal told us that Rabbi Yehuda says one can make schach out of boards, meaning planks of wood, obviously that's from the trunk of the tree. Now, however, has to be from the same as the dal minim. Must be, that's what Rava had proven, that you can, that what's considered the min of the lulav is even the tree of where the lulav comes from, and therefore that could be used as schach, as we see clearly Rabbi Yehuda has to hold from that brisa that it's from the dal minim, and he says you can use pieces of wood, obviously it's from the trunk of the tree of the lulav, and therefore one can also use it to bind together the lulav, even has to be beminoi, but the sieve and the ikra the dekel will be considered part of the lulav. Now, on that the Gemara asks, Umiyam Rabbi Yehuda, did Rabbi Yehuda really say this, as he says clearly in the Braisa, that arbas min an in, that one can only go ahead and use for the sukkah, which we said would have the same halacha as the binding of the lulav. Arbas min an in, only from the four types of the minim, midach rin aloi, however, one cannot use any other of the dal minim to be kasher for the schach. But V'tanya in the Braisa says, sicha ben esarm shal erez, sheesh ben dal tfachim, someone went and he made schach out of planks of erez that are dal tfachim, divrei hakol psula. Everyone holds that it's pasul. Ein behem dal tfachim. If it's not dal tfachim, so then we have a machlekes. Rabbi Meir says it's pasul. Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Rabbi Yehuda says it's kasher. And the end of the brayse is umay dira meir. Meir agrees. Hashem yesh beineser laneser kim loy neser. If there are gaps between these boards, which he holds they're pasul v'schach, but there you have the space between them is the same amount and the same distance as the boards themselves. Sheminiach pesel benein, and in that space you put kosher schach, ukshir, that then Ramei would agree that it's going to be kosher. But be that as it may, erez, how it's usually translated, means cedar. But whatever it is, it's not an afetz avos, it's not tamarim, it's not one of the dalet minim. So how can he say over there in that brisa that if you make the planks of wood out of erez, it's going to be kosher? So that the Gemara answers, my erez, hados, actually when there the machalit, their argument between the wood of erez is actually referencing to a hados. Kederabba Barav Huna, Dam Rab Barav Huna, Ami Bei Rab, descendant of Yeshiva of Rab, Asara, Mina Razameh, there are 10 types of trees that are called in the umbrella of what's Erez. And Hadis is one of them, as the Gemara explains in Mesechus Rosh Hashanah, Tavchav Gimel Med Aleph. Shnem, like it says a pasuk in Yeshaya, Etim by Midbar, a place in the desert, Erez, Shita, Vahadis, Vagam, etc. So you see that under this category of Erez is Hadis, and there's no contradiction. Yes, Rebuda holds that one could only make the schach out of the Dal Minim. So you take a bunch of lulavim, or hadasim, or aravas. However, this erez that he's arguing, he says that if it's less than four tvachim, it's going to be kosher, these planks of erez, actually is a reference to hadas, and therefore it's no contradiction. Now, the Gemara continues explaining our Mishnah that Remeya Oymehi argued in Rabbi Yehuda. And he says that Philip and Meshicha v'chulu, even if you make the binding, the aguda, of the lulav, hadasim, and aravas with a string made out of linen, it's still going to be kosher. So time learn the brisa, elaborating on this machlekes, the Amrav Meir says, "Maisi b'kiri Yerushalayim." There was a story with the wealthy and the respected ones of Jerusalem, she'oygdenes lulavim, that they would bind their lulavim, similar to what was said in our Mishnah, b'gimayni shalzav, with these strings made out of gold. So therefore, you see, it doesn't have to be b'mina like Rabbi Yehuda says, the same type. They used some other fabric. So Amaloi, they said to him, "No, misham raya." From there is a proof. B'mina haya'oygdenes mulmata. Actually, they went and tied the lulav bundle together with the lulav branches from underneath. Comes out, this binding that they did on the top of the golden thread was just to make it beautiful, but not to make it kosher for the halachas of the binding, because the binding actually is like Rabbi Yehuda. It has to be b'minoy. The top was just on top of that, and therefore there's no contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda that it was, you have to bind it together with b'minoy. Now continuing on this theme, the Gemara brings that Amaluhu Rabba used to tell, Lahanu Megadli Hishana. Now, as Rashi explains, the term Megadli here means those who used to bind the lulavim, the Bei Rish Galusa, of the household of the Rish Galusa, who was the one in charge of the people in Galus, he's the leader of the Jewish people. So he told those people that would bind the Lulavim for them, Ki Gadliso Heshana Bei Rish Galusa, when you bind the Lulavim, Heshana is the term that's given for the entire bundle of the household of the Rish Galusa, Shari Bei Beis Yad, leave a handle underneath. In other words, on the bottom, below where you're binding it together, leave space which is not covered by the binding. And the reason is because he held that the aguda, the binding, is not part of the mitzvah, like the rabban who hold that you don't need to have aguda. And therefore, Rabbi told them to leave space underneath where they could hold on to it, so that there should not be an interposition between one's hand and the Hayshana, which is the name of the bundle of the love of Mehandas Maravis, because if you're going to be holding it where you're binding it together, that's not considered ulekachtem lechem. You have to have a lekich, you have to hold it. You're not going to be holding it because you're actually going to be holding the binding. If you hold the binding as part of the mitzvah, fine. But he held it's not part of the mitzvah. And therefore, so although it's a beautification of the mitzvah, but you're not actually holding the object of the mitzvah, you're holding the binding, the beautification, and therefore leave space beneath where you could hold it. Now, however, Rava Amarava said, and he argues, he says, no. Whatever is beautifying the mitzvah is not interposing. It's part and parcel of the mitzvah, and hence you don't have to leave space. You could hold it by the binding, and it's not going to be considered chatzitza. That's the first of three similar discussions in halacha where we have this machlokes between Rabba and Rava, if it's going to be chatzitza or not. A second illustration of Amar Rabba says, Loilinkat inish hayshana besudra. A person should not hold this lulav bundle with his sudra. If he's coming to take it, he shouldn't wrap his kerchief, which he has between his shoulders, that he takes it with his hand to hold the lulav. He shouldn't do that. And the reason is, you need a complete taking, and you don't have that because you're holding it with a kerchief. You're holding that sudra, not the lulav, and therefore don't do that because it's not going to be a complete taking. For Rav Amar Rav said no. Taking something through something else is considered taking. You don't have to actually be touching the object. I'm taking it. So if I'm wearing gloves or if I'm taking a kerchief, that's not considered a problem of lekicha. Now, actually, Amar Rava, Rava says, where do I get this idea? That taking something through a medium of something else, since I'm manipulating it with that object, is as if I'm taking it. Did not like learn the Mishnah Masechtas Parah. Now, as Rashi explains, they used to bring what's called the mechatas, which are the purification waters for someone that becomes tameh. They spray it on the person on the third and the seventh day. So they used to transport it from city to city in these long, narrow tubes made out of reeds. And they would conceal the purification waters over there to use for those who are tameh. Now, part of that process is that they had the water in there. You have to dip an azib, the hyssop type of a herb, you have to dip it in, and then spray it on the person. Now, there the Mishnah in Parah explains that if it was that Ezev Kotzer, if the Ezev was too short, then when you dip it into this tube, it wouldn't reach all the way to the other end where the water is, the purification water is on the bottom. So what do? So Mesapkai, you make the Ezev longer, so that's the word Mesapkai, Kedei Sipuka, that it could reach it, that it could get to it. How so? Bechut, or bekushi, you could do it with a thread, with a spindle, and that's a tool that the women use to sew with. V'toivul umala, then you dip it in, so it'll reach. Then you'll take it out. V'oichiz be'ezav umaza, then you take away that medium, you hold on to the ezav itself, and then you spray. Now, the question is, amai, why can you do that? But it says in Pasuk Bamidbar, b'lokach, that you should take the ezav, v'tovul, and you should dip it into the water. Amrachman, that's what Torah says, which means that when you're toveling it, when you're immersing the ezav into the purification waters, it says v'lokach, that you have to have a lekich, you have to take it. Yet the Mishnah in Parah says that you can use it, you could dip it in through something else, with a thread or with a spindle. Elolav. So rather, Rava says, what do we see? Shemami, no, we hear from this. Lekicha, al deidav achar, shema lekicha. Obviously, taking something, which is what is necessary for the Ezav, you need a lekicha, through something else, be it the chut or the kush, you're going to have it considered as lekicha. Now, Rashi explains, however, but then why does the Mishnah say when you're spraying it on the person, you have to take away the medium and hold the Ezav itself? So Rashi says that's for a different reason. That's because if you're going to spray by when you're holding on to the thread or with the spindle, it's going to be shaking either way, and you're not going to be able to focus and get a direct hit on the kli that you're trying to purify, and that's why you have to hold on to the ezav, but not because it's problematic that it's through deva achar. And therefore, Rava says, you see, like what I'm trying to say, that lekicha al deva achar is shema lekicha. Now, the Gemara refutes that proof. He Gemara says Mimai. What's the proof from there? Dimashan Nihasa, maybe that halacha in Masechta Sparah is different. Kivin Chabre. Since you're attaching this thread or the spindle to the Ezev when you're dipping in, Kegufei Dami, it's as if it's part of the object of the Ezev, and that's why it's going to be considered Lekicha, because it's not a Dilava Acher. It's actually the object that was just lengthened. And therefore, there's no Raya, but if it was something else, actually, that wasn't attached, maybe it would not be considered a Lekicha. So rather, the Gemara says in Lahacha. Rather, the Raya is from a different Mishnah Masechtas Parah. Now, as Rashi explains, here also, when they would transport the ashes, where there's a few different components of this process of the purification of the Paraduma, that there was ashes and there was a certain water. So they would transport the ashes in these tubes, and they would sanctify the water, that component, in a trough made out of stone. Now, the reason is because all the different activities of the Paraduma were done with clay avonim, with stone vessels, if possible, because we wanted to make something that's not makabel tumah. We wanted to do extra levels, stringencies of tahara. Now, then they would place the ashes from the tube that was into the water that was already in the trough, because the ashes had to be on top, as the Gemara Masechtas Sota learns it after Zayin Mabez. It says in the pasuk, "Mayim chayim el keli," that the pure, that the live waters have to go into the vessel. That first you put in the water into the vessel, and that there shouldn't be the ashes in the way. It should go straight the water into the vessel. Now, although it says in the pasuk, "V'nosen alav mayim," it sounds like that the ashes are there first, and then you put the water on that. So that Rashi explains, the Gemara in Saita there explains, it's just that you mix it up afterwards. But really, the water's going first. Now, regarding this case, what if, let's say, someone's coming to sanctify the waters, which means the water's already there in that stone trough, and then you're coming to pour in the ashes. Now, however, if nafal, if let's say the ashes fell, mishveferis lashaykes, it fell from the tube into the trough, so, which means to say that it wasn't intended, it just fell out as you tripped over something and then fell in. So then the Mishnah there says, pasul, the kiddush, the sanctification of these mechatas, which is when there's a combination of the ashes with the water, is not going to be valid. The reason is because the pasuk says, v'lokhu me'afar srifas achatas v'nosan, that you should take from the ashes and you should put it, which means to say that you have to take it in your hands and put it in, which is not in this case where you didn't take it to put it in, it just fell in, that will not be valid for the kedusha of the mechatas. Now, the Gemara continues on the base and makes the diuk, makes the inference, ha-hi-pi-lo-hu. But if, let's say, it didn't fall in by itself, but rather he, so to speak, fell it in. He made it go in intentionally, similar to the case of when it fell by itself. It wasn't by itself. He made it fall, but just he wasn't holding onto the ashes itself. Rather, he held onto the tube and he emptied out the contents into the trough. Would sound like that would be kosher, because that didn't fall in by itself. Now, amai, the question is, why is that the case? There's a pasuk in Midrash that says, the Torah says, you should take the ashes and you should place it into the trough. Elalav, so rather from here, Rava says, Shema Mino, we can hear that Lekicha, Deidav Acher Shema Lekicha, obviously taking something through something else, which although the Torah tells you have to take the ashes, you're not. You're taking the Shveiferes, you're taking the tube and you're pouring the ashes in through that medium, you're taking it through Davar Acher. We see obviously that the Torah considers it a lekicha, as the Mishnah Masechtas Parah says, that it's only if it falls in by itself. That's not considered taking. It fell. But if you went and you did it b'miskav and you did it intentionally, that would be considered valid, and obviously because lekicha deva achar is small lekicha. Now the Gemara continues with a similar type of machloikas. Again, va'amar Rabbi says, le'ilodutz inish lulava b'hishana. A person, after he really bound the arava and the hadas together, so you have those two of them together, he should not go ahead and now sticking the lulav from the top into the binding. Now the reason is, the dilma nasri tarfi, maybe as you're pushing down the lulav into that binding, some of the leaves of the hadasim and the ravas are going to fall off, but they're going to still be stuck inside the binding that you bound them together. Now those leaves which already fell off the hadas and the rava are going to be a chatzitza. They're going to be interpositioned. They're going to get in the way between the different meaning of the lulav and the hadas and the rava. Now, essentially, what that means is that they're not really bound together, that it should be one lekicha, because they're not together. There's something in the way, which is not part of a kosher lulav, hadas, and arava, because these are leaves that fell off. They're not part of the kosher minim, and therefore don't push it in that way, because you're going to end up ripping off some of the leaves, and they're going to be chatzitz. It's not going to be considered a lekicha tama. Now, Rava, Amar Rava argues, as he said, similar to Amar Alf. He says, Min b'mina ein l'chaitzis. Another halacha he says regarding chatzitzas. He says, just like he says when it's lanai for beauty, it's not considered chatzitza. Here also he says, when it's the same type, that's not a chatzitzas. Although it fell off, still these are the leaves of the hadas or the arava, they wouldn't be considered chatzitzas between the hadas and the arava and the lulav. Similar halacha of Amar Rava, again Rava says, Loi ligus inish lulava. A person should not cut off part of the lulav, which is, let's say, the lulav is way too long, longer than the arava. Now, he comes to cut off the lulav from the bottom. So if he does that, but obviously he can't cut off from the top, that would make the lulav puzzle. So he's considered cutting the bottom, that shouldn't be so long. So on that, Rebbe says, one should not cut it, but hishana, when it's already in this bundle, again, what we call the hishana, when it's bound together. Rather, what you should do is, first take it out of the bundle, then cut the bottom, and then go ahead and put it back and bind it back together again. And the reason is because the mishtari hutzi. If you're going to cut it off when it's already in the bundle, then you're going to have some leaves that are off of the shedra now because you cut it on the bottom. So the leaves of the lulav are very long and they're attached to the shedra. Now, if you're cutting the bottom, you have those bottom leaves, since they go very long, although now they're not attached anymore to the shedra because the shedra was higher up and the ones in the bottom are disconnected because actually that part has already been taken out of the lulav, you cut it off, but those leaves are still stuck within the bundle because they're very tall. Now, what comes out is that you have part of the torn leaves that are in the bundle, vava chatzitza, and that's going to be chatzitza because now you're not holding on to that. These leaves are getting in the way. Rava says, no. The fact that you have these outer leaves of the lulav that are very long, that are not attached to anything anymore, but they're stuck in the bundle, that's the same min as the lulav itself. Again, that's not a chatzitza. Vama Rabba, another halacha from Rabba about the dal minim, is hadashal mitzvah, the hadas and the myrtles of the mitzvah that you're using on sukkahs for the mitzvah of dal minim, asala riechbay. One is not allowed to smell them on sukkahs. Now, as Rashi explains, we learn that from the halacha of sukkah, where the Gemara says in the first parak of Testament Aleph, where there's what's called the heavenly name, Shem Shemayim, is acquired on the woods of the sukkah wall, which means to say that for all 7 days, as the Gemara there learns out, it's forbidden to have any pleasure from the sukkah, because it's what's called Huktzul Mitzvasai. It's already been separated for its mitzvah purpose, which means it's L'Shem Shemayim, you can't use it now for your own personal pleasure. So the same thing applies to the Hadassim. It's also been hooked to the mitzvah, so it's considered separate, muktzah, similar to the halachas of muktzah and Shabbos. Here it's muktzah for a mitzvah purpose, and therefore you can't go ahead and use it for your own personal pleasure. Esrik shal mitzvah, however, regarding the esrik that you're using for the dal minim, mutal yirich, but you're allowed to smell it. So the question is, my time, what's the reason? What's the difference between the esrik and the hadas? So hadas, the l'reich akoy, the hadasim, where its utility is generally meant for smelling, for aroma. So ki akse, when you're separating it, saying, look, the hadasim are not for me, it's for Hashem now. What are you separating it from? Mirecha, from what its normative pleasure is, that's what your akte, that's what you're separating it from, which that's smell. Esrug de la chilakoi, however, esrug, with its generic usage, is for consumption purposes. So ki akte, when you're separating, saying, look, it's not for me, it's for Hashem, mechila akte, you're separating from mechila, but not for other types of utility, which is not its main purpose, and therefore one could smell the esrug on sukkahs. Now, related to this, the Gemara says, V'amar Rabba, Rabba says, Hadas b'mechubar, and this is not regarding the halachas of sukkah per se, it's regarding any Shabbos throughout the whole entire year. When you have a myrtle, a hadas that's attached to the ground, mutal la'ariach bay. So Rabba says, you're allowed to smell it. Esrug b'mechubar, however, but esrug attached to the tree, asal la'ariach bay, you're not allowed to smell it on Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, my time, what's the difference between them? So Rabba says, Hadas la'ariach kay, regarding hadasim, where again, its main utility is for smelling. In other words, what that means is that even if we permit the person to smell it when it's attached, he's not going to come to cut it off, because even when it's attached to the ground, it also still has a good smell. And therefore, he's not busy thinking about how's he going to cut it off so he can get to utilize the pleasure that he wants from the hadasim, that he'll forget and he might rip it off on Shabbos, because he can have the same smell, which is what he wants from it, even when it's attached. However, esrog de la chila koi, however, esrog, where its main utility is for eating, isharisle, if we permit the person, so when he's smelling it, he's going to forget, aslamigazi is going to come to rip it off, because he's going to rip it off so he could eat it. And as Rashi says, even if he's not going to rip it off, he's going to eat it when it's attached. There's no greater iser malacha of kalisha, of ripping off, as when you're actually biting it off, which you're getting it off that way. So either way, we're concerned to let you smell the estric, because then you're going to want to get the pleasure out of it. And what's the pleasure of it? That's a pleasure that's going to make you violate one lamates malachas, and that's why we don't let you smell it. But by hadis, there's no reason why you would want to violate one lamates malachas, because you'll get to smell the pleasure that you want out of it right there when it's attached. Vam Rabba, another halacha from Rabba in the context of the Dal Minim, says lulav b'yamin ve'esrig b'smal. The halacha is that we take the lulav bundle in the right hand and the esrig in the left hand. So the Gemara says, my tam, what's the reason for that? So the Gemara says, hani t'lasa mitzvahs, this one, the lulav bundle, has three mitzvahs in it. It's the lulav, the aravas, and the hadasim. But the esrog, which is not taken in the bundle, is only one mitzvah, and therefore the one with the more mitzvahs is in the right, which is always the more prominent hand. Related to this, the Gemara says, my time lomer v'chinan ila al natilas lulav. What's the reason when we make the bracha on the Dal Minim, we say al natilas lulav? Why lulav? What happened to all the other ones? Hadassim, aravis, esrog. So the Gemara answers, hoil v'gvay mekulan. Since it's tallest from amongst all the Dal Minim, so it's the most chashuv, and therefore the entire bundle is called after the lulav, and that's why we make the bracha on the tilas lulav. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? V'ligbehe le'estrik v'livrich. Just elevate the estrik, hold it higher than the lulav, and then make the bracha on the estrik. And that is because the Gemara assumes right now that when we said that the reason why we make the bracha on the lulav is because it's the highest from all the other ones, is based on the Gemara we said in Lamed Beis and Beis, that we said that the shedra, the spine of the lulav, has to go a tefach higher than the hadassim. So it means when you're holding it, the lulav is going to be higher than all the rest. So we make al tilas lulav. On that, the Gemara is asking, what do you mean? So just hold the estrog higher, it will be the highest, and you'll make the bracha on the tilas estrog. So now the Gemara says, Amalei, he answered, no. What I meant was that since in its species, in its natural form, the way it grows, the lulav is the tallest from all the three, therefore, that's the one that we make the bracha on the tilas lulav, because in its natural form it's the tallest, so it's the most chashuv, and that's why we make the bracha on the tilas lulav. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on a different aspect of the Dal Minim, which is a rabbinic halacha of what's called shuckling, the nanuim of the lulav. So that the Mishnah asks, v'heichan hoyu enanin, where in Halal would they shake the lulav to fulfill this mitzvah d'rabbanan of nanuim? So that the Mishnah tells us, b'hoydu l'Hashem, when they would say thanks to Hashem, which is actually the pasuk of hoydu l'Hashem kitayv, both t'chila v'sayf, in the beginning and at the end. And that is, there's a hoydu l'Hashem, which is in capital kuf yutches, per kuf yutches in Tehillim, which in halfway through Halal is when we say the first hoydu, and then we have the hoydu at the end of the parak, which is said at the end of Halal. So we say by both those hoydus is when we shake the lulav and the esrog. Uva on Hashem Ishiyana, and also when we say on Hashem Ishiyana, that's when we shake the lulav then also. Different bissel, that's a penim bissel. So therefore it comes out there's three times, the two hoydu l'Hashems, and when we say on Hashem Ishiyana. We also shake even when we say Anashem Atzlichana. So Amar Bekiva, Bekiva says, Tzayfa Hayisi B'Ramim Libri B'Shua. He says, I looked B'Ramim Libri B'Shua, Shekol Ha'am, that all the people, Hoyimananes Luvain, they were all shaking their lulav like B'Shamai, B'Anashem Atzlichana. V'Heim Loinanu, but they didn't shake their lulav, Ela B'Anashem Hashiyana. Only like B'Shil, only by Anashem Hashiyana. Now the Gemara asks a question on the Mishnah. Nanua mandikarshme. Whoever mentioned anything about shaking the lulav, that we should know that there's an obligation to shake, which was so obvious to the Tana of our Mishnah that he didn't even tell us that there's such a chiyuv. He just asked the question. He said, you know, where do we shake? Shake. Who said there's a chiyuv to say when we should do that shaking? So now the Gemara answers Hasam Koy. It's actually going on the beginning of the Perek, in that first Mishnah where it says Kol lulav sheish b'shloish tefachim. It was talking about the requisite shear for a lulav. It says that any lulav that has a shear of three tvachim, kedelin a neaboy, and as we had said, and also that what you could shake with it, which we said is another tefach, then kosher, then the lulav is going to be kosher. So obviously from the halachic criteria of a lulav, we see that obviously there's a mitzvah to shake it. As the Gemara will say later on, it's to withhold certain evil winds and the bad dews. Now, v'kamer, and that's what our Mishnah is saying, heichem enanin, where do we shake? In other words, we said one of the criteria for lulav, that it should be valid, is that it should be the certain height, and that it should have a certain amount more that you could shake it. Now, you see, obviously, you have to shake. So that's what our Mishnah is asking, where is it that you shake it? Now, clarifying this halacha of what exactly does it mean to shake the lulav, the Gemara brings Tannhauser, we learn about it in the Mishnah Masechtas Menachos, that says, shtei halechem, regarding the two breads that are brought on Shavuos, v'shnei kivsei atzeres, and also together with that are the two lambs that are brought on Shavuos, where he has to do tenufa, which means he has to wave the two of them together when the animals are still alive. As the pasuk says, "Amikah chav gimel," it says, "V'heinif hakoyev hakoyim hakoyin oisim alechem agoymer," that the kohen will wave these things on the bread, ashnei kavasim, on the two lambs. Now, on that, the Mishnah Maseches Menachos asks, "Ketzer oisa," how do you go about taking the two breads with the two animals and waving them? So that the Mishnah says, "Menich shtei halechem al gabi shnei hakavasim," and you put the two breads on top of the two lambs, when the lambs are still alive, as the pasuk says, "Alechem habikurim tenufa al shnei kavasim," to put the two breads on top of the two lambs. Now Rashi says, although the first half of the pasuk sounds like that you put the lambs alechem habikurim on the breads, but there the Gemara Masechta Menachos learns out from the lechem hamiluim that just like over there, the breads from the 7 days of miluim had the breads on top. Here also, it's having the breads on top and the animals on the bottom. And then you put your hands beneath the two of them. And he waves him, and the process is he goes and he brings it forth and back. He picks it up and brings it down. Shnemak says a pasuk in Shemais, Asher Hunaf, that which is waved, which that's a reference to the Moilech Umevi, waving it forward and backward. But Asher Hurim in the pasuk says, and that it's elevated, which means taking it up. Now, as Rashi says, you can't take something up without taking it down. And that's how you know it has to be Ma'ilu Marit. Now, although this pasuk actually is not by the Kivsei Atzeres, it's rather by the Miluim, but that's what called all halachas of Tenufa, which applies to the Shnei Kivsei Atzeres. We learn that from the halachas of Miluim, and that's why we could use that pasuk to illustrate how the application is done by the Shnei Kivsei Atzeres with the Shtei Halechem. Now, so that's the halacha we find in that Mishnah Maseches Menachos, which is this halacha of Tenufa, of Ma'ilu Chamevi, Ma'ilu Marit. On that, Amar B'yechan, and he explains the purpose for this tenufa. He says, Moilech Umevi, you go forward with the animal and the breads, Umevi, and you bring it back. That's to illustrate, Lamisha Abarucha Shaloi, that we're doing this mitzvah for the sake of the one who all the four directions are his. That's what we're illustrating when we're doing the tenufa. Maile Marid, when we go up and down with it, is Lamisha Shemaim Bar Shaloi, is to show that we're doing it for the one that heaven and earth are his. That's one version of what this waving is. Another version, b'merava masnohachi, in Eretz Yisrael, they learned as follows. That Amr b'chama bar ukvo, Amr b'yizr b'chanina, Moilech Umevi, when you go forward and back with it, is k'dei la'atza ruchis ra'as, is to withhold the bad winds. So this is, so to speak, like warding them off. Milo Marid, going up and down with them, is k'dei la'atza t'lasram, is to hold back the bad dews. That's how he's saying, keeping it up, keeping it down, so that the evil shouldn't come. Now, Amr b'yizr b'oven, v'itim, and some say, b'yizr b'zvila, that zeis, this that Rabbi Yossi said, that tenufa, the waving, will hold back the bad winds and the bad dews, Emeris, that tells us, we continue on top of Lamed Chesed and Aleph, that shiyari mitzvah, that the remnants of a mitzvah, which means say that mitzvahs themselves that are shirayim, that just are the remnants, they're peripheral, that they're not the main component which would withhold the atonement of the mitzvah you're trying to do, in spite of that, it's still considered so chashiv, that they themselves, which are the peripheral of the mitzvah, they're not the main component, they themselves are so chashev still that they'll withhold punishments. Shari tenufa, shiar mitzvahi, because tenufa, the waving, is just the remnants of the mitzvah. Now, what that means is that it's not mi'akiv de kapara, as the Brisa learns at Teres Kainim, the Gemara Mesechlus Yumin of Haman Alf brings this, as the Pasuk says, letenufa lechaper, that it should be a waving as an atonement, which the Gemara there asked, what do you mean? Is the waving an atonement? But we know regarding karbanas, the only atonement that's necessary is the blood. So rather, the Gemara there explains that if you make the waving as shiari mitzvah, which means say that you make it a remnant, you make it something that you're not going to do, the pasuk still considers it as, yes, you didn't do a preferable choice mitzvah. However, it still will be an atonement because you don't have to bring another karban. So you see that although it's considered a shiari mitzvah, yet, and still we showed that by doing the waving, it's holding back certain punishments of evil winds and bad dews. Now, that's the halacha in the context of the Shtei Halechem and of the Shnei Kivsei Atzeres. Now, Amar Rav, Rav said, the same halacha applies to lulav, that we do the same things, Moilech Umevi, Mailu Umayrit. As the Gemara says, that Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Mamtilei, he would he'd do the mevi, he would go forward with it, umaychlan, he would bring it back. And additionally, Omar, he would say, Dein Gera Be'ena de Sitna. This is an arrow in the eye of the Satan, which means to say that with this lulav that I'm going forward, we're poking out the eyes of the Satan, because he sees he has no power to rip away from us the yoke of the mitzvahs. He sees that we're holding on to the lulav. Now, however, regarding that last component, the Gemara says, v'lav milsi, that's not something appropriate to do. Because if someone's going to do that, he's going to provoke, he's going to incite the Satan, who he's the same one that's the Yetzirah, who incites people to move away from the yoke of their creator. And therefore, you're going to try to incite him, and he's going to incite the person. He's going to be moist him, so he's going to give himself totally up. He said, yeah, you think I can't get you? And he's going to make the person to sin. And therefore, a person should never provoke the Satan. We do that with Ma'alech HaMeh, but don't say that this is an arrow in the eyes of the Satan, because then he's going to really try to get the person, and then the person might come to sin.